A.W. Masters, Reel 7.
On the other end, you could be in a similar ship, or possibly the same ship, with a change of captain or commander, whoever was the martinet. And you get a totally different complexion on things. And in some ships you would find they'd even go to the point of, don't say you're being lax, but they would be inclined to be so easy that you could see the departure from the previous standard of discipline. And nobody liked that, you know. If you got used to the stricter discipline, you didn't want to come down to what we used to call the Callio Navy. It just wasn't done. You see, it wasn't a case of being single-minded on any subject, because you naturally, with 800 or 900 men in a ship, where you're going to live with those men for two and a half, 3 years. By the end of that time, you know everybody's personalities, you know everybody's little weak points. And that applied to the officers just the same, you see. And people, as I say, if you got used to the routine, they didn't like to break it.
And you, in a way, men seem to prefer the more disciplined ships rather than the less, because this told them where they stood, perhaps.
Exactly.
Yeah, you knew always what the game was.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. Well, I saw that in my own case, you see, without departing from your story at all. When I was called up again, you see, after the outbreak of the Second War, I went round to Harwich, and we was with a crowd of minesweepers there, and these minesweepers were all fishing, big trawlers, with the fishing crews on board when they came, and they were real hard cases. Not one of them had any sense of discipline at all, because the skipper was Tom, Jim, Doug, or Harry, as the case might be. And what we had to do was to run those ships, or not to run the ships, but to run the routine so that everything was smooth, you see, from an administration angle, like replacement of people through death or what have you, merely to see that the whole thing was kept afloat. And providing you was fair with those men, you treated them as men, to start with, altogether different to the Navy, you see. And they, if they came to me, for instance, with a query, can I do so-and-so? A typical case. I had a man come to me one day and he said, can I go on leave, Chief? I said, depends what your excuse is. What do you want? Well, he said, my family's been bombed. I said, well, they don't need to say so earlier. I said, where do you live? I knew his address, I had it in my records. But what I wanted to know was where the bomb damage was, because we could cross-check with the police, you see. They get through, what's the position, if it had been demolished, okay. Well, I simply said to this man, right, go and tell your skipper you're going on leave for 7 days. There's quite often the batch, you see. And in the meantime, I went to the air commander. I said, look, Casey, man's family had been bombed. I said to him, he said, can we spare him? I said, oh yes, I'll replace him with another equal rating. Then he came back, there was his throwaway warrant, everything made out. I said, now, if you're in any doubt when you get there, report to the police, ask them to ring back here, we'll deal with it. Now, from the time that happened, I'm not going to say I put me on a pedestal, but I don't want that impression at all, but the point was, if any of those men had any queries, they'd simply come over and say, can you help me, Chief? Mm-hmm. Well, what do you want? You see, in other words, it's how you deal with men. Mm-hmm. And I could do absolutely anything within reason mm-hmm. with those chaps.
Do you think, in a way, the Navy discipline actually makes a man less competent in other ways, because he becomes so much part of a larger unit that doesn't require him to do things
at all? No, I don't. I personally think it makes a man more self-reliant. You see, because a man's going to use his own nut and say, well, if I do so-and-so, I can help myself. That's my own impression of the thing. And by and large, you find that these men who have been subjected to naval discipline over a number of years, they grow up, as I say, with self-reliance, and they know how to treat the various conditions of life. Now, that's, to my way of thinking, vastly different to the army. So, coming right back to what we started off with. Because if a man transgressed there and he went to the sergeant said no, he wouldn't have any further to do about it. In the old days, of course, not nowadays, they nurse them. But, I mean, there isn't that same discipline. It's another kind of discipline. You see, they're all right, barracks, square, blanco and brill cream and all that sort of thing. Now, the Navy treats men as men, you see. The Army, they're merely a unit.
Yep.
That's my own idea, rightly or wrongly.
In the nature of things, discipline, in a way, depends upon somebody being here and somebody taking orders, somebody on the top and somebody underneath. You talked earlier about men who thought they knew as well as the man on the top.
Oh, you have come across them.
The Navy could deal with that.
Yes, definitely.
In what ways would they deal with somebody who was really kicking back?
Well, you could always bring up, we'll say, it's very seldom you would come across that. But if it did, you see, if a man objected to what he was told to do, do you understand what I've just said? Yeah. Well, what's your objection? And if they had a stated objection, and if you knew what your job was, you could find a fault in his reply, usually, because it would be a stilted reply based on possibly hearsay or possibly an experience which had no bearing on the present sort of thing. And you could bring them to see sense.
Yeah. Discipline can also be used, you said earlier in talking about swimming, to by ridicule. It can also be used in a humiliating way. Do you think men ever felt that discipline in this way was implied to humiliate them, or did you witness it in any sense?
No. Of course, there again, it depends upon the person administering it. See, if you're used to dealing with men, you don't do that. You treat them as men. And if they're not worthy of that treatment, then you can alter your treatment and add possibly a word of ridicule just to bring them back to common sense sort of thing.
What about those people who actually enforce discipline on board ship? Not the officers or the POs, but the ship's police, the crushers. What sort of people were they? How did they find them?
Usually, they were treated with contempt. Now, I say that as the petty officer in chief of the altogether, I had 22 years, 12 years of petty officer and 10 years of chief in my time. And it's true the 10 years chief's time was added to by the 6 years of the war, but anyway, there was 22 years experience of petty officer in chief. Now, the type of people who, in the old days, turned over to the ship's police were the rejects. And when they altered their name from the NP, Naval Police, to RPO, we knew them as rejected petty officers. That's true. Because they consisted of people who, we'll say, might have been yeomen of signals, they might have been telegraphists, they might have been stoker POs, they might have been any branch almost as a petty officer, you see. And they didn't suit in their own branch, or they saw an easy way of becoming a master at arms. And usually, they weren't the type of people that we as petty officers wanted to know anything about. You see, now you take a case like the Royal Sovereign. In our petty officers' mess, we have 74 petty officers. You've got experience from all over the world there, and you've got various types of men that you knew by living together for about 2 and 3 years. Amongst them, you've got quite a degree of experience. You didn't want anybody, because he was an RPO or Naval Police, having the damned audacity to come along and say, Sergeant Joe, stop it. I mean, there'd be no violence about it, but you simply wouldn't have any truck with them. Neither were they allowed to become overbearing with their ratings, because if the ratings had the complaint, they could go to their own petty officer and say, look, so-and-so is the case. Okay. or the other arm of the RPO concerned, or if he turned nasty, so right down, see the commander, take it straight to him. And usually, they was with the petty officers.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the commander depended on his petty officers. Well, he knew the sheep from the goats. I mean, he'd always get the blacks in any walk of life. Mm-hmm. And if a person was at all questionable, well, you know how to treat them.
And in general terms, what you're saying is that the RPO type was questionable in the Navy, in broad terms, because they were police type, because they took on the job in a way.
They were, but then they were nobody's friends, you see. They put themselves on a pedestal, or tried to. And it's amazing the amount of corruption you used to find amongst them, you know, if you knew your way there. So I was in Chatham Barracks one period for 18 months. And during that time, they had a huge police force there. And there was no good amount telling me that so-and-so was the case. And the next day, he'd be coming along to me and saying, get us a couple of tickets for so-and-so, to which he wasn't entitled. You know, I simply used to have to maintain just the one saying, no, nothing doing.
I mean, backhanding was quite a feature of the police.
It is with all men. Whether you've got a large number to deal with, you'll always get the spirit who's looking for the odd way out. You see, and anything can be made on the side. But as I say, that wasn't encouraged at all in the service.
And the police weren't really popular with neither the officers respected them in a way, nor the men, because...
No.
Just because of, in fact, the police-type role, that it is a kind of sneaky role, essentially. I mean, it's a law where you have to be watching. Do you find any instances where they actually, you know, actively created a situation so as they would catch a man in
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, and then, I mean, as again, it's talking about experience, see? Well, the moment you saw or knew something untoward was happening, why? You'd weigh up the pros and cons and you would always trap them. Well, not always, but invariably they come off second best. Yes. Yeah, it sounds foolish nowadays, but, I mean, there it is. You're dealing with a large number of men.
Mm.
You see, and as I say, in that type of Navy, even in a destroyer, you see, you could be in a destroyer with, we'll say, 80 others, if you're with them men for 2 years. Or if you're in a battleship with 900. You're with them for 2 or 3 years, or in a sloop, and you've got 30 men. You know them all. Mm. See, it isn't a case of they're all individuals. They all are, but then communal life brings together so much that you know all their weaknesses. You see, you know their ability, you know their experience. In other words, you know all about everybody, as everybody knows all about you. You see, and I mean, if a man is consistent, if he's a disciplinarian, if he's consistent, they know exactly how to treat him. Because if anything is wrong and he says so, it is so. It isn't a case of being clever, it isn't a case of trying to bamboozle the other chap. But in other words, they don't get away with it.
Just to finish on this discipline question, you mentioned before how different ships, you know, had different patterns of discipline. Who was the chief factor influencing discipline? I mean, was it the master at arms, or was it the commander, or the captain? I mean, or did everybody have some...
Well, they all had a different field of responsibility.
Mm.
The whole running of the ship depends upon the manner or the experience of the captain. The captain lays down the law. The commander directly under him is responsible for running of the ship, and he's responsible to the captain for the conduct of the ship's company, the appearance of the ship, and everything that goes on. The engineer commander has got his own branch, or did have in those days, and he would run his own department, not to the exclusion of, but in parallel with, the commander of the upper deck. The commander of the ship was the bloke in charge of the upper deck, you see. Now, they could be a strict disciplinarian, or the captain, we'll say, could be a very stern man, and he would simply tell the commander, that the standard he wanted was this. The commander had to conform to his wishes by informing the various divisional officers, and it would come down through the lot, you see. And they would rely largely on the divisional officers would rely on their petty officers, you see. And the whole conduct of the ship depended upon the way the routine of the ship fitted in. So that if the